learning itself, I want to add one more introduction about the division of chapters. Since we're going to be learning in the order of the chapter division, which is what this project works with, we have to talk a little bit of the meaning of this and what it does to us. So first, let's make clear what exists in the Tanakh itself and what does not. So the Tanakh itself does not come with chapter breaks at all. In other words, if you read the text, which is what we for sure have from whenever the text is from, we have a continuous text. There isn't like any official places like where the text itself says, this is where the end of chapter one is, and here it starts a new chapter or a new part. What there is in the what's called the Nusach HaMesorah, in the tradition, like in the Sefer Torah, which we have, does have breaks in terms of spaces being left. There's two kinds of spaces known as Parsha Stuma and Parsha Ptucha, open and closed Parshiyot, which there's a discussion at the debate in the Rishonim still how exactly that works graphically, but these are two levels of leaving some space, which seem to indicate a beginning of a new Parsha, a new chapter. But it's important to notice about this two things. One is that this is not in the text itself. What is the Mesorah of Parshias? It's not clear that this is from Moshe or from when the text itself was written. That's one important thing. Secondly, even if it was, it's not clear that we have the original division of chapters. Famously, the Nusach and the the other parts of the Mesorah that we have is accepted is from Ben Usher in the 10th century, who the Rambam adapted as the authoritative version of the exact letters and Nekudos and Tamim for the Tanakh. But there is a contemporary debate if the Parshas, which the Rambam also says that he copied from Ben Usher, there's a big debate if the Parshas is something that Ben Usher at all edited. We do know that there are many different versions, and in the Chumash we have the Parshas of the Rambam. In Tanakh there isn't even that. In the rest of Nach, right, there isn't even that. There is to this day a big since we don't really write like official Sefer Tanakhs like a Sefer Torah, besides for some people who do. There isn't really even that. So it's less clear that these Parsha breaks, which are known as in the text of a Sefer Torah, it's less clear that these are original, less clear that they were in the original Sefer Torah itself, and it's even if there was, it's less clear that we have them as clearly as we have other parts of the Mesorah. Now, another important thing is, so those are the only, if you open a Sefer Torah, those are the only parshas that you will find in it. It's another third thing to notice about them is that these do not necessarily break up the text in logical ways. So it's not clear to me, and I haven't found anyone, I mean, people discuss this, but it's nobody that I know has a very clear, simple, definite theory about this. But it seems to me that there are different reasons for these parsha breaks to exist, not necessarily for cutting up the text in a logical way or something like this is where a certain subject begins and ends and things like that. In some places it makes a lot of sense, and there seems to be some kind of logic, some kind of rules which it works with, but in other places it does not. Now, besides for that, we have what I called in the previous class the liturgical divisions. Parsha Shavua is one of them. There's another one which is called Sedarim, which is more or less the Parsha. Famously, there were two cycles of reading the Torah and Shul. The Bavli way was to read it once a year. The Israeli Eretz Yisrael way was to read it once in 3 years or maybe more. And apparently there's lists of Sedarim, which are basically the Israeli, the Eretz Yisrael minhag of cutting up the Torah. Both of these, I think explicitly, are not even trying. There's not even like a reason to think that these are some kind of original way of cutting up the text. These are entirely liturgical. They have their own reasons for stopping and starting in specific places, which are entirely or explicitly not tied to how the text itself works. Now, what we do have in the text itself, and this is important, And the contemporary scholars of the Bible as literature, what is called the school that studies the Bible as literature, have worked a lot on identifying these things. And also my Chumash and my Tanakh, Mirtz Hashem, is based, tries to be based mostly on that. And that is that there is, it is very clear for someone that reads the text itself, that the text assumes some kind of organic to itself level of parshias, of things that start and end. There are certain, for example, there are certain language that are explicitly language of this is the beginning. Like in Sefer Bereishis, we have Ele Toldos. Ele Toldos is always like this is the beginning of a subject, or maybe of the list that's after it, or maybe of an entire part of the book. Whatever it is, the word Ele is like a header phrase. It's in a header. It's a header pasuk. So those are the kind of things that is explicitly, and then there's slightly less explicitly where you can like see like a new story starts, and there's different ways. There's like how do you call them? There are formulas. There's different formulas in which the text itself starts a new story or connects it to the previous story. So those are the kind of divisions that do exist in the text itself. And when you learn, if you want to read, like we said, the main thing is to try to make the text work and flow. What we have to work mainly is with those kind of divisions. One more word about the chapter. So now, there's all modern Tanakhs and Bibles, we have this chapter verse numbers, which we use to reference. Now, these were historically created in something like the 13th century. They're attributed to a Bishop Langton from England, who made this. Now, the reason for this existing, just to be clear, at least the reason for they were being printed in the Tanakhs and in the Bibles, was not for any of these reasons. So it's not a liturgical division, and it's not a content division like the other ones. It's mostly a reference division. So when the first person who used these, we call them Christian, it's weird to call just a number Christian, we'll talk about this in a second, but these numbers, these chapter and verse numbers, the first person to put them into a Yiddish Tanakh said that the reason he's putting it in, him in, is because there were debates with Christians about the meaning of verses in Tanakh, and the Christians would use these numbers to reference them. They would say, what do you say about the verse 22 in chapter 15? And then if you don't know where to look it up, it's useless. It's hard to have a debate. Now, also originally, the reason why these numbers were invented was mostly for reference purposes. So since people read Tanakh, or they want to say, you want to have a discussion, you want to have a debate, you want to give a sermon, and you want to find the pasuk. So in the same period were concordances invented, which help people find the pasuk which has a certain word. Now, if you make a maftach, if you make an index to the Tanakh, you have to have a way to reference a certain part. So for that purpose, the numbering, the standard numbering which we have was invented mostly for reference purposes, and that's also the way it's used up until this day, mostly for reference purposes. And the important thing about reference is that it should be standard. It's not really important that it should be correct. It's a lot more important that all of them have the same one. So if I tell you to go look up verse number such and such, you know where to find it. So that's how it was created, and that's also how it was used, and that's why it was used. And for the same reason, putting an ideology into this discussion and say, well, it seems like the chapters, maybe they were made by a Christian, therefore not allowed to use them, or maybe sometimes they make mistakes, therefore we should stop using them. All of those arguments are much less strong when you realize that the main point of this is to be a reference. It's like a page number. There's nothing holy about a page number, but it's very useful and very important that it should be a standard page number. I would say that if we aren't judging the correct division of content, and I've went through for my work the entire Torah and a lot of Tanakh, comparing the different divisions, these three or four different divisions that we just discussed, the parshias of the Sefer Torah, the parshias that we read, the Siddurim, and the chapters. In some sense, each of them has its places where they don't seem to make sense, but nobody can say for sure, I've read someone that made a list, but nobody can say for sure that the chapter division is less logical. In many, many places, it seems to be the most logical way to break up the text. Of course, these are different norms. For example, parshias seem to have their own ideas about how long a parsha should be. They don't really have a problem. For example, the parshias have a very, very long parsha. They don't break it up at all. If it's one big story, that's always today's one long parsha. That's something that chapters don't do. So if there's some story that's obviously a very long one story, they still will break it up just because the chapters are for reference and have one very long is not good. Or if you want to learn in that order, you can't learn in one day or in one session such a long story. So you're going to cut it up just for those reasons. But other than that, they're as logical as division as any other one of these divisions that we discussed. And the only one you should really care about is the one that's not in any of them, which is the divisions that this text itself shows you.